You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. Okay, let's do some quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. That's obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. To reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. Here's the thing. Information is power. Information is money. Literally, the currency of today's world of entrepreneurship is information. And if you could bring all of the information about your business into one dashboard, this is incredibly valuable. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of the truth about your business. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. This is so valuable. You just hit a button and you can see all the information about your business instead of having to like call five different departments and get all these emails and put it all together and make sense of it. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is
I Will Make You a Millionaire, another episode helping someone reach their goal of making millions. Jen Glantz is part of the Millionaire Mentor program I'm doing, which is trying to help four or five people get to $1 million as quickly as possible using the techniques in Skip the Line. Jen has been doing really great. She's making idea lists every day. So important to make 10 ideas a day. It rewires your neurons. It transforms your brain. You become much more creative. You become much more abundant in ideas that can make you money. On today's episode, we look at other ways she could scale her experience, other things she could do. The key to making $1 million, of course, is to not have one source of income, but to have multiple sources of income, and we start working on that with Jen. I haven't suggested to them, in fact, I specifically suggested do not monetize yet. Too quickly, people think, how do I make money off of this? The key is build something that people want, get people to want it, and learn from the process, because you might learn things about your product or your business or your idea that you didn't know before, and only then to consider how to make money. Don't forget, Facebook and Google did not monetize their businesses for years after they started. In this particular episode, I push Jen on coming up with more creative ideas to how to scale her knowledge. And when I say push, it's not that hard because she's already building that idea muscle. She has tons of ideas, and it's such a big difference since the first episode. Here we go. My kids went to Disney World the other day, or a few weekends ago, and you couldn't pay me to go to Disney World. Like, I can't stand it.
Yeah.
Just the idea of it, I can't stand.
But they opened, didn't they open the Star Wars? Oh, no, that was, that's in
I don't need
LA.
To go on a Star Wars roller coaster to appreciate Star Wars, which is a...
It might ruin it for you,
yeah. It's a good story. I don't need to go on a roller coaster to appreciate the story. So how's it going, Jen? I got your notes,
yeah.
And thank you for sending those. And I got your stuff about the marketing for your business and your current services. Can I ask you a couple of questions?
For sure.
First off, how did the 10 ideas a day go?
So this was a great kick in the butt, and I overdid it in the fact that I started doing it in every area of my life. So I did the lists you asked for, but then I started doing it unasked for other people. So I was on Facebook and I saw in a Facebook group, someone was like, if I opened a restaurant in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, what kind of restaurant should I open? So people were giving them ideas. And I said, you know what? I'm going to spend 10 minutes and give this person 10 ideas. So I wrote that person 10 ideas.
That's a great idea, by the way. That's often how I generate my idea list, is I see what questions people are asking. And then I write the list. And then that's also food for an article somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. And this person wrote back and they were so impressed. They were like, thanks for, you put a lot of thought into this. Thank you.
And yeah. Then, people are always like blown away.
Yeah. And then this weekend I was sitting with my husband, we were eating breakfast and I was like, let's do some lists. Let's make some list of businesses we could start together. So we spent 2 hours and we just made a bunch of lists. And, you know, I think once you start doing this as a daily practice, it becomes something you look forward to. And yeah. I found myself doing it multiple times a day just to organize things in my head.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll do it 3 or 4 times a day. Like if stuff comes up, I'll do a list. And once I start, I have to do 10. And so that's my rules. And so what were some of the things for the restaurant? Like what kind of restaurant should that person start?
I started to think about what was missing in our area. So one of the things I thought about was it could be cool to do some sort of DIY pizza making restaurant because pizza is so big. Why not have people go and sit down and have an experience where people could DIY their own pizza? I thought about how this area is changing a lot. There's not a lot of lunch places. So I gave them the idea of like $10 or less, everything on the menu is $10 or less for lunch. I gave them an idea of almost like an Instagrammable type of restaurant where people can come for the photos, but stay for, you know, other types of food. And then an idea that I really liked is to support local people who are making local food. So some sort of Williamsburg only kind of restaurant where everything in the restaurant or market is sourced from Williamsburg, Brooklyn.
Yeah, I like all those. So what kind of food other than the pizza, what kind of, is there any interesting foods that they could focus on?
I gave them some ideas of sort of blending different types of food. So taking things that could be popular. So maybe doing some sort of Italian sushi kind of thing, you know, just throwing out ideas of like, how do we blend? Like, cause that's what you always talk about is that idea sex. So how do we blend two different types of popular foods in the neighborhood? So I threw out some ideas like that. I also threw out, you know, they've opened up all these like really interesting cookie kind of spots around here. So I was thinking about, okay, dessert wise, what could be a viral type of dessert place? So I was brainstorming something around cupcakes and infusing that with, you know, weird types of flavors. So I spent some time doing this just because I really wanted to, not because I cared if he chose my idea, but I really wanted to exercise my brain like that. And I felt like before I started doing these ideas, I sit by myself a lot, I think a lot, but I don't do anything about it. And this really felt like a release.
Yeah, that's great. Because, and also it's okay to have not so good ideas. Like it's just an idea list.
Yep.
So I like all the lists that you made and sent me. I'm taking a look at them now. And how's the business itself? Anything new happen in the business? The Bridesmaid for Hire?
Yeah, I felt like after we talked, I said to myself, okay, what are some really easy, simple experiments I could do that didn't cost me a penny to do to see if things changed or to see if I could just have some fun? So I did a couple of really small experiments to test out some things. So one of the things I did was realize, okay, on the Bridesmaid for Hire Instagram account, I've been able to increase that tremendously this year. And I have a Linktree button on that page that gets more clicks than my website. And what I found interesting about that is the links on that link tree were so bad. They were taking them to so many different places. It was a bad experience. So I spent about 3 hours just brainstorming what could be the links for that link tree. I spent some time figuring out the whole experience and I saw a huge change in metrics. I saw that the views tripled on that link tree click thing. And I saw that the clicks also increased. So I saw a lot of traction just by sitting down and revamping that experience so that when you're on the Instagram page and you want to check out more about me, I have almost a bit of a curated experience now based on what I hope people want to do.
I'm on the Linktree page for, so I see that your Instagram account, by the way, you have a lot of followers on Instagram. That's good.
I started off with 3,000 in January and I grew it all in the past couple of months organically.
Organically, just by posting stuff and people share it with their friends and other people sign, and anybody going to a wedding or anybody having a wedding probably is a follower.
Yeah. And also just by doing what Instagram likes. And right now they like those reel videos. So I spent time recording batches of these reels and every single day putting them out. That I got millions of views on some of these reels. And that organically helped me go from 3,000 to 22,000 in just a couple of months.
I don't know what the reels are. What is that?
It's exactly like a TikTok video. So it's a short 15, 30 second fun video with music. Sometimes you're lip syncing. Sometimes you're, you know, showing different video clips. They're fun. They're catchy. And sometimes they give you a little bit of value, but they get people to come to your page to want to learn more.
Oh, this is great. Yeah, you're getting 121,000 views on this one. This is great. 50,000 views, 85,000 views. Jay, we should start doing reels.
You should start doing reels, and they're super simple. I mean, one of them got 2 million and I film these and it takes me a minute to film them. And then the, you know, traction of them gets me to increase my following, gets me to increase people clicking this link tree. So that's when I sat down and realized I have to do something about that page because I get more clicks on here than my website.
Wow. That's incredible. Yeah. And I wonder how many other people in the wedding business have this the same kind of social media following that you do.
I think a lot of people, that's their goal, is because they feel like that's their number one marketing tool. So I think a lot of people try, but I think a lot of people are using social media wrong. I think that's like the number one thing. A lot of these people are using social media wrong and it's not working for them.
Yeah. So in your businesses that you'd like to start, one decent idea is you could be a social media agency in the wedding business, in the wedding industry.
Yeah, I like that idea because I think it goes into, I think a lot of wedding vendors are doing their marketing wrong. They're doing it old school. They think the only way to get clients is to advertise in the knot, but there's a lot of ways, whether it's doing awesome PR or doing great Instagram, that they're not doing. So I think something in the wedding consulting marketing world could be either a course or maybe another type of business idea.
Yeah, or I'm sure you know many wedding planners and stuff. You could find someone and say, listen, you only have like 500 followers. This is a great place to not only get clients, but to convince clients who are on the fence to go with you as opposed to another wedding planner. Like it's social proof if you have like 30,000 followers on Instagram. And for the first one or two, you can even just do it for free and show them. And then those are great testimonials for you. And then you go out and you basically hit every wedding planner in the country and do a social media business for anybody in the wedding industry. Like it could be flowers, planners, whatever.
Do you think it's better suited as a course or do you think it's better suited as me, the human, doing the consulting?
I think if you don't do it as a human first, then the course won't be as good. But and by the way, doing it as a human can make a lot of money. So it might not be at first. You might not think, oh, I can't sell it because it's all me again. But as you get more and more clients, you have people servicing them and you have ongoing contracts to maintain their Instagram account, their TikTok account, their LinkedIn account, you know, their Facebook personal, you know, not personal page, but their Facebook page. So, you know, eventually you build equity by just having lots of contracts with recurring revenues.
Yeah.
And that's a legit business. And then you do a course because you're going to learn so much more when you're actually doing it. That's why I say start off, do it manually for like one or two people just to kind of get the feel if you like it and what nuances are needed that you didn't realize. And then you do it. And then that could expand into a course, it expand into a newsletter, whatever.
Yeah, I think it's an awesome idea. I think for me to feel passionate about doing it, I would have to charge a lot of money because it's one of those things where I know I'm good at it. I know I'm really good at all of that, but I don't know if I really care to help these people,
yeah,
you know?
Sure. That's
so
fine.
I think it could be something that if I charged enough money, I would be happy to do it.
What would be enough money?
You know, if I was going to structure it hourly, you know, I would want to charge at like $1,000 an hour. I'm just going to throw out a number like that, which is uncomfortable for me to even say, but a part of me knows that this is stuff that I've known I've done for quite a while. I think I'm really good at, and in that hour of advice, I think that they could get, you know, let's say they book 5 new clients just from that hour's worth of advice. That $1,000 is nothing for them to spend.
Yeah, exactly. So let's say you have you're doing $1,000 a month, and however long, you know, maybe they want more than that, and then you scale it by, you know, showing the social proof of how you're successful with other, not just wedding planners, but anybody in the wedding business. And you could also then hire people so you could scale.
Yeah.
So, and then you don't have to charge as much when you're hiring people. Like if you're paying somebody even $50 an hour, which is a lot, and you charge $300 an hour, you're making a good profit.
Yeah. So I like that.
Mm-hmm. So that's just one thing to think about, because you did so good boosting your own Instagram, and you're talking about just in the past 3 or 4 months, mm-hmm. that's something that's really valuable. Like, you know, people pay a lot of money to drive up their Instagram followings because they want to be an influencer or they want to get clients or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's, and you have this particular niche, which is the wedding industry. That's a huge industry.
It is.
So the other thing I was thinking of, you know, and actually let's keep looking at the different wheels that you described. So you wrote these lists of ideas, and you wrote courses, products, and then you have the wheel of, like, you know, the spoke and wheel approach, where brides is like the wheel, and then here's the spokes, like services, books, products, courses, email. And then you have, here's another wheel, pro bridesmaids, here's another wheel, bridal party, another wheel, wedding thought leader, which I like. So all this is great. And you got that idea muscle flowing. So you see how, you know, once you start doing it, people are attracted to you. Like the restaurant person actually reaches out and contacts you. And, you know, other people presumably will get in touch with you if you write ideas for them. So, you know, here's the other thing too. You do PR for yourself. You've been featured, like you mentioned here, you've been featured in over 500 media outlets. What about PR for people in the wedding industry? What about setting up a public relations industry? So that's, you know, something you could charge like $10,000 to $15,000 a month per client, and call up all the media outlets, you know, if somebody's got an interesting story.
Yeah. You know, people in my life have always told me, you're so good at getting PR. You're everywhere all the time. I just don't know if I'd want to do it for somebody else, because I don't think I would care enough about their product or their business to brainstorm and help them. You know, it's one of those skills that I don't have passion in helping other people. I have passion in gaming the system and strategizing for myself, you know?
Well, this is one area where, because you've done it so well for yourself, maybe you can make an online course for this. Like, we know, we have several mutual friends that have done the how to get more PR style course, but not in a specific niche. You have a very specific niche. And, you know, I know we have one mutual friend specifically who releases one course a year, sells it for like, I don't know, $700, and sells, you know, 3,000 of them, and is making like a good living.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I think I have the credibility easily with that. I've never thought about gearing it just for the wedding industry. And I think that could be super helpful, because there's so many wedding publications that are always looking to feature people for free. I just don't think people know how to get themselves in the news in that way.
Yeah. And so here's one idea for an idea list, is what kind of articles would be good for a wedding planner. And I'm focusing on wedding planners, but there could be any part of the wedding industry. But like a wedding planner might have some client where they're doing their wedding underwater, and boom, that's a story. And she has to plan this underwater wedding in the Maldives. And, you know, that's an odd story. Or I'm just, you know, thinking off the top of my head, but, or there's like the strangest stories from the 10 most popular wedding planners on the planet. And so you had a story of the person who was, you know, texting her boyfriend right before, you know, saying her vows.
Yep.
So like everybody's got, all these wedding planners got stories. So there's so many different types of stories you could pitch, and they just need their names in the media, because that's, again, social proof and authority that, hey, when the media wants a story, they call me, and it's great for their website. So, or their Instagram or whatever. So that would help them. So the online course idea there is really good. So I think, those are our legit ideas.
Yeah, I'm just thinking my perspective's unusual because I also get a lot of pitches because I write for a lot of bridal magazines and newspapers. So I get pitches all the time that are horrible. So I have the perspective of like what not to do. I have the perspective of how I get PR, and I also have the perspective of the freelance writer. So I never thought about it at all. Coming at it from those three directions makes my knowledge very valuable in that space.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know if this is a good business idea, but I really like the, I'm sure, you know, people are very nervous when they speak. And So you're a professional speaker. So I'm sure you still get nervous when you speak, but not as much as when you first did it.
Yep.
And for many maids of honor or best men, you know, when they have to give a speech at a wedding, they are terrified. A, they can't write the speech because they're not funny or they don't know how. And B, when they actually have to give the speech, they're just a wreck, like they can't do it. And so, You know, the maid of honor speech writing or even a video, or I don't know, there's something there with writing a speech as a maid of honor. Like what are the components of a great maid of honor speech? Like it's got to, you know, have memories. It's got to have humor. It's got to have the arc of the hero a little bit. And it's got to be self-deprecating or at least insulting the bride or the groom a little bit.
So this is my like my sleeper package that so many people buy, but I never advertise, is that I, on my website, I offer maid of honor speech writing. So I will sit down and write your speech. I probably do that 4 to 5 times a month for people. And the number one reason why people hire me is because they're not good public speakers. They don't want to write it. And I sit down and I write it for them. And look, that's not scalable having me do that. And I keep thinking about selling some sort of template, because what's out there when you Google is horrible and generic.
I love a template, and I love a course for that, but a template might even be better because you could have like 10 different templates, and you could have a website with all the testimonials, like, oh my gosh, I used template number 3 or whatever you call it, like name them, you know, nice bridalish names. And you could have all these great testimonials. Of course, people are going to want to pay even $50 just to see the templates. And you just need, you know, a couple hundred of those. And that's a good, you know, multiple stream of income. So a couple hundred of those a year.
I like it because I could do it in like a Mad Libs format where it's like, okay, for like a funny one, here's the joke, insert that detail to make the joke work. You know, there's so many, making a speech, if you do it right, is so easy that it's almost like fill in the blank kind of thing. And that's what I really do when I get paid to do it for people.
Yeah. And it could be the case that like when it sounds like a template, people think, oh my gosh, everybody's going to be doing the same speech, but that's not true because if you fill in the blanks, everybody could have completely different stories and memories and negative things to say and like, oh, this is when she helped me. And that's a whole story. And here's how you tell a story. Like what was the most emotional moment? And that's how this paragraph starts off, you know, when the bride helped the bridesmaid, and, you know, how did it start? What was the, you know, you get back to the critical moment, and then here's how my friend, the bride, solved the problem. There's all these things that are, you know, it's almost like you're explaining story writing, but in the context of a maid of honor speech and, or even a best man speech as well. And I like that as a template. So there's, what have we talked about so far? Wedding, social media, maid of honor speech.
PR.
Firm course. You don't want to do a PR firm, but a PR course for wedding planners. I like that a lot. And all these things are kind of easy to try and set up. I was looking at your current courses and they're all good and interesting. Like, but I feel like other people do many of these, like the personal branding course. I feel like I've seen that in a lot of places. Become a Stronger Public Speaker is good, but I think I've seen that course in a lot of places, not yours specifically, but that type of course. But if it's very specific to weddings and the maid of honor speech, then I think, you know, even though it's very niche, you only need like 1,000 people paying $149, and that's a good stream of income. And particularly then, you do it as a course and then as a template, then it's unbelievable.
What I was even thinking for the template is to almost tier it. You get one option is template. Second option is use the template, send it to us. We edit it for you. And then option three, which is the upsell, is you get one-on-one time with me to help you with the public speaking or the writing or whatever it is. Now there's three price points. Do you think that's a good route or just stick to the template?
It's good to have an upsell. But when the upsell involves your time, then you have to wonder about the scalability. So unless it's like a huge amount, like $30,000, but they're not going to want to do that. Because then if it's just like $100 and they have an hour with you, then it's not going to be a real valid source of income. But it is worth thinking about what is the upsell from that. But let's think about that for a second. Like, there are things related to, you've now seen many marriages begin, right? Like how many weddings have you been a maid of honor at?
I mean, we've worked over 150 in the past 6 years, almost 7 years.
And how many of those would you say you keep in mild touch with? Like you just keep track of like how they're doing and so on?
I would say less than a third.
Okay, so 50, but 50 where you were like really intimately involved, like you were their maid of honor, like you were at their wedding. Yeah. They feel an emotional attachment to you because it's emotional. It's their wedding. It's for many people, they consider it the most important day of their lives, and with good reason. Yeah. They're, you know, picking their spouse and the father of their children and all these things. So how many of the marriages do you think have problems or end?
You know, I think it's hard to know problem-wise. I think, you know, of the people I sort of see on social media and I followed up with along the years, I would say maybe of the 50, I've seen 15 that I know of end. But again, I'm sure there's more, who really knows. So, you know, some of them end problems, who knows? People don't always post the problems, so obviously on social media. So I don't know. And I've never done a good job of really keeping in touch with them, almost to make sure that I have boundaries in the job, because if not, my whole life is my fake life of being a fake friend to these people, you know? So I've had to almost have a bit of boundaries.
Yeah, no, I get it. You know, just, and this is like, this might not be a good idea. I'm just throwing it out there because we're just brainstorming. It's just idea listing. you know, one time, and this is like a really long time ago, but one time I was going out with somebody, I was single, I was going out with somebody who cheated on me, but then she wanted to stay together with me. And I was really upset, of course, about this, but I ended up staying together with her, but it was just too difficult for me. And ultimately we ended it. But during that time, I actually subscribed to an online newsletter, like some email newsletter. It wasn't like newsletters like how they are today. It was just some email newsletter. But I paid like a good amount of money for a year. Like I signed up for a year in advance. And it was just basically how to survive when someone cheats on you. Like, and I paid for that. Like, and I'm assuming, and this guy was charging good money. I can't remember now what he was charging, but he was charging a good amount of money and I was paying it. He must have had other people paying for it. And even though it didn't even matter a few weeks later, but I still kept reading the newsletter and it was interesting to read even.
Yeah. You know?
So I
like that.
I wonder if there's some things like that.
Like, well, I remember, because you had me make a list of some of the things I could upsell past clients on. And I thought about a newsletter because I don't know of anybody who hits you up that first year of marriage. Like I don't know of anybody who has a profession or a service for that first year of marriage. And that's when a lot of couples suffer. So I was thinking of a couple ideas, like a newsletter for how to get through the first year of marriage, maybe bringing in some experts like marriage counselors or whatever, but making that a paid product for a lot of past clients, but also people who, because a lot of people after they get married and they find out about me, they're like, I wish I had someone like you. So this could maybe be a product to upsell to these people who their first year of marriage, you have no idea what to do. Also, after you get married, there's a huge spike in depression because you've got nothing to look forward to. And that's a huge thing that people say after they get married. I don't know of anybody who is selling anything to that audience.
Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a three-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, I, of course, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a three-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember talking to Kevin O'Leary. You know, he's Mr. Wonderful on Shark Tank. And he was telling me he did quote unquote due diligence on his wife for 3 years before he got married to her. And that's like financial due diligence. He wanted to make sure he was marrying someone who was financially compatible with him. Not meaning that she had the same amount of money as him, but meaning that she thought about money in the same way. Like, people, there's a whole spectrum of ways people think about money. And men and women often think about money very differently, you know, for better or for worse. And there's good reasons for all of this, like biological reasons, evolutionary reasons, and so on. And just in general, financial reasons. You know, it strikes me that 3 years is a lot of time to do due diligence on your spouse. And I would guess most people don't do that or don't view it as due diligence, don't do it properly. And so what happens is then the first year, there's a lot of problems. Like you say, let's make a list right now. So what are the problems that people have in the first year of marriage? Depression is one.
Depression, finances, because they have no idea how to merge their finances or what to do. They never have those conversations. The pressure of everyone in your life talking about kids and having kids. They might not have had a conversation about where they stand on that. Religion. I know people who've gotten married with different religions, never talked about what they were going to do. So religion is another one. I think overall, just the relationship, you know, after you get engaged, there's such a high and now you've come low, and it's not depression. It's almost like, what's next for you and I in this relationship?
Yeah. It's like, I think about like the stock market. Like, sometimes the stock goes straight up for months at a time, but then once it starts stabilizing and going up some days, going down some days, going up some days, people freak out sometimes. Like, it's very stressful.
Yeah. It's that stressful. I also think like expectations maybe in the relationship of like, sometimes those change. I've heard of people who, once they get married, one person changes the expectations of the other. So that can really throw off a relationship. Also,
like,
people
like
get
married. How do expectations change?
You know, sometimes people are like, well, I'm going to get married and then I'm going to stop working, but they've never communicated that. So then they get married.
That happened to me. I got married and then I was an entrepreneur. So I got married. I had left my job. I had a full-time job and a business at the same time. I left my full-time job to focus on my business. And then the person I was with basically quit her job and said, okay, we're married now. And like that was never a conversation. Like, I came home one day and she had quit her job. So
expectations. And I think another thing is people make a move. So they move, maybe they buy a house somewhere, but there's definitely an element of moving that can be something that's bad.
Yeah. Like real estate's a big issue. A lot of people might be at different points in their life where one person wants to buy a house, but doesn't have the money. Another person has the money, but doesn't want to buy a house because they're not sure where they live. Or one person wants an apartment. One person wants to live in the country. you know, yeah. there's lots of things that come up about real estate after marriage, because there's almost no need to talk about it before you get married. You don't even know you need to talk about it. And you kind of, right. people just assume that the other person feels the same way. So I think real estate's a big issue and on how to talk about it and what all the options are. Like, there's more than just how do you talk about real estate. There's like, here are all the possibilities, and
yep.
you know, you have to respect each other's, whether it's a financial thing or do you like city living? Do you like country living? Like what kind of, you know, some people want to, what's your number? Some people want to retire at a different point and write the great American novel. Other people, you know, either want to keep working or want their spouse to keep working, to keep, you know, pulling their weight. And, you know, career is a big issue too, that I think people, yeah. I mean, sometimes I think people do probably talk about it, like religion and kids. People probably at least have the conversation, oh, what would you like to have kids at some point? Yeah, sure, I'll have kids at some point. But they also might have been lying, because they don't want to derail the relationship. And before they get married, they're not having kids anyway, so they could say anything they want, potentially.
I was going to say, I think truth is one of them. I think the truth comes out for some people after they get married, because, you know, the truth of how maybe they really feel about the person, or that just a lot of truths come out, I think. And I think, you know, that's really scary too. I think there's a lot of things that go on that first year, and a lot of that's caused by things they ignored during the engagement. You know, when Adam and I got engaged, I also tried to do my due diligence. We met with a divorce lawyer. I said, tell me everything you know about a prenup. We met with a marriage counselor. I said, what should we know that might change? We met with a financial person. I wanted to make sure that we were signing that legal document, and we had all of those tough conversations. I'm in an industry where I've seen a lot. So when I chose the person I was going to marry, I put him through all of these situations.
Yeah. I wish I had done all of that at different points. I think I didn't want to do it because I was afraid the marriage counselor would secretly say to the woman, listen, you could do better than this. Just don't rush into anything. This person's a little insane. So
I was scared of that too. I was scared too.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes I think, what are other issues? Like, maybe an issue might be their friends, or like maybe they're best friends with their ex-girlfriend or ex-boyfriend. That might be an issue. Like, what kind of friendships, and like, who are they going to spend time with, and how are they going to spend time together now?
You also said it, like, sort of life planning about, are you on the same page about retirement, or even how you want to spend your time? You know, those are conversations that get real. Should we, you know, even like, should we buy life insurance? And I mean, these are like unattractive conversations that start to come to a head during that first year of marriage.
Yeah,
to
life insurance
taxes
or a will.
Together.
Yeah.
Writing a will. Yeah. And you know, there's also like, there's a prenup, but then there's also a postnup that some people get. And maybe that's not the right term for it, but sit down after they're married. Yeah. And they think, wow, I never considered the fact that all of our assets are now blended. So there's conversations around that. Or one person's about to sell their business or something like that, and then they have to have those awkward conversations.
Yeah, or maybe someone's setting up a business and is their husband or wife an owner? Or are they 50-50 owners? Like, how does that work out? So like, that's related to the postnup thing, but it's like in between. You know, it's like a business partnership agreement as well as a postnup agreement in a weird way. So I think like if you compare this to, so let's see, let me find your page for this. Craft a memorable elevator pitch. I like that, but again, I feel like I've seen that. You know, but if you're talking about a course, like, you know, or a bunch of courses, I don't know yet if this is one course or a bunch of courses, but like a course called the first year of marriage, solve the 999 problems, or solve the 1001 problems that come up in the first year of marriage. And that's like a weekly online newsletter that's, you know, you're talking to people about depression, finances, religion, kids, you know, every week. And you talk to experts. So this way you could have multiple issues about kids, because you talk to different experts at different times. Like, it's not just you. You're like really doing the work that no one else is doing to put together a good quality newsletter. You get 1,000 people paying $50 a month, and that's $600,000 a year.
Yeah.
So
I am so excited about this idea, because A, I'm living through it. So I have that perspective. And B, I really don't think there's a lot of touch points other than maybe generic books about this topic for people.
Right. Just totally generic books. Like just someone like Kevin O'Leary, who's a very smart guy, just someone like him talking about his own marriage and relationship and how he did due diligence. That's very particular to him. We know with him, he's very concerned about money and he's very conservative about money. So that was his issue. He's probably not saying, talking to his wife, his girlfriend about, hey, you know, how many times a week do you think we'll be having sex or whatever, whatever it is people talk about. So like all these, and then not only, and here's the thing, you also know so many people in the wedding industry, like wedding planners could be an affiliate for you. Just like they take 20% off the top when they book a catering hall, they could take 20 or 30% throwing a client to you. And there's all sorts of newsletter companies that take into account, you know, how to track affiliates and all that kind of stuff. Like Jay, what are some companies that keep track of affiliates? Do we know?
Not really, because usually they are the one that send over and they usually have their own software.
Yeah, I mean, look, in here, I'm talking as someone who has had over $150 million in revenues from selling newsletters. And I don't know. I think we use homegrown software, but I have no idea.
You guys use homegrown software.
Yeah, but there's other companies that it's just off the shelf. I forget what they're called, though. And I wonder if Substack tracks that kind of stuff or Ghost. These are two newsletter companies. But I think, again, some of these even just could be niche newsletters, like how to deal with depression in your first year of marriage or personal finance for the first year of marriage. And that's an infinitely long topic. Like that's why people like Dave Ramsey and Susie Orman spend 30 years making a career out of just that. So again, I don't know if this is like, a newsletter that covers all these topics. Maybe it could be. You see how it starts off and then you kind of upsell a higher end one about finances, or maybe you recommend, let's say you're doing a newsletter about, let's say you're doing this broad general newsletter and then you do one about finance. Like, look, I'm not a stockbroker or anything, nor am I a personal finance advisor. I'm just telling you what I see from hundreds of stories about weddings and the first year of marriage and all the research I've done talking to financial professionals. But now here's five newsletters I recommend. One's about stocks and investments. The other's about personal finance. The other one's about real estate, blah, blah, blah. And then you have a deal with those newsletter writers. So you get 70% of their first year's earnings of all the people. And like if they sell their newsletter for $1,000 and you send 1,000 people over to those, you know, overall per year, that's another 700,000. So, and that's not impossible. That's like how a lot of these multi-million dollar newsletter businesses start.
Yeah. You know, I think it also could be a good gift that people could give people, you know, for like their first year of marriage kind of thing, that kind of newsletter. But do you see it more as a newsletter than a course?
I see this as a newsletter because it's an ongoing relationship with, you know, with the people who sign up. And, you know, the other question is, do I see it as free or charged? Because I'll tell you one anecdote, which, so I have several tiers of newsletters. Like if I'm going to do, for instance, a newsletter about stocks, well, I have people working for me and it costs money to advertise. So I have to charge a lot of money for that. But I also have a free newsletter that just has what I always like to write and I send it out for free. And that has, you know, hundreds and hundreds of thousands, maybe a million people who get that. And I make, just from that free newsletter, I make millions and millions of dollars in revenues. Because if I write about, oh, here's something about artificial intelligence now, and here's, you know, here's what I know about artificial intelligence, but here's five newsletter companies that specialize on stocks that focus on AI. And so I'm sending people over and I have an affiliate relationship with those. And that generates money every single time I send out one of those newsletters where I'm recommending other newsletters.
Yeah.
And that's a free newsletter that I put out. Like there's no, a lot of that goes to the bottom line because I don't have to hire as many people for a free newsletter. The people I have to hire is someone who sets up affiliate relationships for me. But, you know, and I have to approve all the, you know, relationships and so on, but that can be very lucrative. So it's just something to think about, whether it's a course or a newsletter, whether some of these, or it's both, like maybe you have a newsletter that talks about all these things, but you also have a course on post-nup versus pre-nup. We're going to do a course. And so you can write an article about it, like which tells stories and maybe has some anecdotes from other people in the industry. But then you say, look, to really find out, here's a template for a post-nup that's been worked over by 5 different lawyers. Here's a template for a pre-nup. But that's, you know, that's the holy grail here. So that costs $79 to have access to that. So, you know, you can combine newsletter and course or access to kind of premium material.
I really like this idea. I think there's something big to it.
Yeah. So then given that, I would think this next week or so, think about starting it. So there's kind of the newsletter or topics ideas here. I'm going to cut and paste into the chat what we talked about with the different topics. And again, these could be newsletter topics or course topics or both. I think that's probably better than helping wedding planners do their social media and the maid of honor speech and the course about PR, but keep those in mind too. But those are ideas focused on the wedding industry. But now these other things are ideas focused on people who just got married. And you know so many people in the wedding industry, not to mention you've professionally worked on 150 weddings. Between you and your network, you know more about all these issues than anyone else. Or if you don't know something, you know who you could call to find out. Like, for instance, I don't know everything about restaurants. I don't know anything about restaurants. But I have enough people I can call every week that I could put together a newsletter about restaurants just from talking to people I know who own restaurants or who are general managers of restaurants and so on, including, you know, one person who's part of this same series that you're part of.
I think why it interests me the most is that I don't love weddings. I don't care about the wedding industry. I love people and I've always loved people. And I think this is another interesting way to help people that's sort of in my lane. And that's why I'm more passionate about this than really any other, you know, working with a wedding planner, things like that. This to me is helping people. And that's passion of mine.
Yeah. And the first year of marriage, obviously you're passionate about it. You're going through it.
So
like, and you've helped so many other people launch their first year of marriage. So yep. I think this is one thing to think about. And then let's make a list of the next set of lists on this one.
Yeah.
So, we already did the list on kind of topics, but there's sort of like an execution list, which is how do you start this? Well, you have to find, you have to find a company. I'll just write these down. You have to find a company that does newsletters that you like. And there's many. There's every ranging from Substack to MailChimp to Ghost to AWeber. Some of them are more technical than others. Like, MailChimp, I think, is a bit technical, but Substack, within 3 minutes, you could set up a 4-pay newsletter. And there's, you know, there's reasons, there's pros and cons to both. Then, you know, pick a company to do online courses. And maybe an online course is just premium material. Or you could look at Patreon that, you know, you have your list, but hey, if people want the premium material, they have to go to your Patreon to get the premium material. And Patreon is a website, you know, where people pay more to access premium material of podcasters or writers or whatever. You know, then you have to think about marketing. So how would you market something like this? Well, it could be through the wedding industry itself, like other wedding planners or other people who do PR in the wedding industry or anything. You know, the other thing is you could do something like Facebook ads. And that seems like, oh my gosh, ads, I don't want to spend like $10 million. No, you can just set up a budget of $20 and run an ad and see if it gets more than a 3% click-through rate. If it does, you do it for $40 and see if the click-through rate continues and see if you're actually converting. Did you get, you know, out of 100 people that click through, maybe 2 or 3, at every level, it's like 2 to 10%. 10% is a home run, 2% is industry standard. So if you run an ad and 2% click or 1% click, that's not so bad. Then out of the people who click, if 2% or 3% of those actually buy the newsletter or the course or your services or whatever, that's usually a home run, depending on how expensive the item is. Because once you have a person who bought something from you, they'll buy more from you if you do a good job. So, oh, now you're going to do a course on real estate. Or let's say you're going to call someone like Dean Graziosi, who does a course on real estate with Tony Robbins, and they put together a really nice affiliate deal for people. Well, you can interview Dean Graziosi for your newsletter that week on real estate for the first, you know, the couple who's only been married 1 year. And then you could upsell his course and get an affiliate deal. The other thing is, you know, let's say you're trying to figure out what topics to do courses on. You could do Facebook ads for that advertise and focus on different topics. And you could see which topics are the ones that resonate the most with people just by what they click on. Now, they can click to nothing. You're just interested there to see what people actually click on. So, and then what people click on the most, that's where you focus your course or newsletter. So
remember you did that with book names. And I think I might try that with names for this to see what would get people to click.
Yeah. Yeah. You could test titles, price points, ideas to focus on. You know, what's other ways to market? Well, whenever you give a talk, you could of course mention your newsletter, but I think these are like the main ways. And then, you know, what's great too, I forget. And maybe we talked about this. Do you use Quora at all?
I've used it as a reader, but never as a commenter.
Well, you should answer questions about weddings on Quora. And then in your profile, you should say, you know, check out my newsletter on all the problems people in the first year of marriage have, or, you know, word it better than that. And you'll get customers from that. I know people who have made a living off of being a good answer person on Quora. So what's another way to market? Of course,
I know that there's tons of wedding podcasts that I've been on a lot that I have great relationships with. And those are the ideal target audience, is to go back on those podcasts and talk about this.
Yeah.
So that's huge. And
Right. And here's another thing too. I would put together almost a self-published book called The First Year. And, it could be, the thing is, there's infinite amount of content. Like, there's infinite amount of content just about real estate for the first year married couple. So you could just have like the basics, make a 50-page book and publish it on Amazon, or give it to wedding planners so that they could sell your newsletter product. You know, why wouldn't they? They get money for free. They don't have to do any work. You're doing all the work. You have to actually write the newsletter, which is hard.
A Google search, there's you know, a first year podcast, a first year book, and that's not a reason not to do this, but I'm wondering how I could make this unique, how I could make this different. And I'll research what's out there, of course, but I wonder what I'm bringing to make this unique.
That's a good question. So the first question to answer is, I see this one, First Year Married on Apple Podcasts. The podcast where we get real about building the marriage of your dreams. And it's from a quote unquote marriage coach, which means nothing. Mm. I mean, you've dealt with more marriages probably than this person for all we know. And, this one looks like it's for Orthodox people, Orthodox Jews.
Yeah.
So that's what makes
them. And I'm also not, I don't want to build a dream marriage. I want to be the real honest truth sayer about the first year of marriage. You know, I don't want to say I'm guaranteeing a dream anything.
Yeah. I mean, this gets very specific on the needs of Orthodox women. So it's that's how they stand out. And they've got 140 reviews. So people are listening to this podcast. I think there's so many different interesting issues. Like, what do you do if one person in the marriage went to Harvard and the other one didn't go to college? Before they get married, that's not an issue. But after they do, that might be an issue. You know, there's so many.
What about politics?
Politics
is
a huge
one. Politics.
I know couples that one's a Democrat, the other's a Republican, and they just don't talk politics, but imagine if they did, there'd be a lot of arguing. So, and you know, not only that, you have also your own email list, plus your own list of people who subscribe to your other courses, which you can market to. And you could say, look, that was a great course you took, or, but this is the most important project of my life. This is the project I was made for. And if you're going through any of this and you kind of list all the problems, then here's what other people have to say about my newsletter. And you have testimonials. And then here's what, you know, Barack Obama says about my advice on marriage, and you have authority. And, you know, here's a free here's something for free that you could use. So that now you have reciprocity, all these things that are in Robert Cialdini's book, Influence, which I think is a valuable book to read, or at least understand the table of contents of, because the table of contents lists all his influence techniques. But so I think there's execution, there's marketing, and you already have a lot of these ideas. So I think this is a good thing to start. And the question is, how do you start it? Well, I would go to your email list and say, listen, I'm going to start this in beta. Whoever are the first 100 people to sign up, get it for free. After that, it's going to cost. And then, you know, and then after a month or two, you should send out a newsletter per week. After a month or two, get testimonials. And now you could start marketing this, or even before then, you could start marketing this. I think this is one where you can execute right away. And each newsletter, by the way, doesn't have to be huge. It doesn't have to be like 20 pages of research. It could be, you know, here's what Jack and Jill are having a problem with. Here's my first thoughts on this. I talked to one other professional and I read some other articles about this, or, you know, or here's some other resources that I looked at. And here's the different ways people solve the problem. And that's a newsletter episode. Yeah. Just as long as there's an interesting story with that and a semi-interesting, you know, solution, then you have a good newsletter issue.
Should I make it nonfiction in the sense of taking all these topics we talked about and maybe pulling in real life stories that I've experienced? Or do you think I should keep it maybe not even just about me, but about people in general?
Both. Definitely stories that, I mean, stories that include you will be great, but there's only so many stories that you personally have. But then, you know, I'm sure there's plenty of places you could read all about different stories, different problems people have. Like if I Google problems in the first, in early marriage, problems in early marriage. Well, by the way, when I typed in problems in early marriage, came up.
That's a good sign.
Yeah, there's 336 million results. So you're not going to run out of stories.
Yeah.
You're not going to run out, like, you know, of course, some of these are don't apply, like 7 reasons child marriage is horrible for girls.
Yeah.
That's, you know, actually this one, that might be early marriage, what early marriage means. Let's see.
That's my Google search too. I'm wondering. Yeah. Maybe first year of marriage.
Yeah, first year. Okay. Even better. 583 million results. You know, here are some mistakes couples are likely to make. They stop dating each other. They forget to check in with their partner if they're staying out late. All of these are newsletter topics. There's so many things. And they didn't, when there's a lot of 9 problems every couple faces during the first year of marriage. 7 real reasons why the first year of marriage can be tough. None of these people are thinking to themselves, boy, how is my article going to be unique?
Right.
But by the way, I think that's a problem. Like, I think it's good that you're thinking that way because you can make it unique. You just have to think about it.
Do you think that means I stop doing, like not stop doing, but should I just be on autopilot with everything else I'm doing with Bridesmaid for Hire, with all my Jen Gland stuff, and add this as an extra thing?
It depends. Like, I think you should try this and see how it works. Okay. And you're going to have to tweak too. Like, what's the right price point? Is this a newsletter? Is this a course? Is this 2 newsletters? Is this 5 courses? But I mean, here's something. What are the risks in the first 2 years? What are the risks just statistically? What are the risks in the 3 to 4 year period? What's the risk in the 5 to 8 year period, which is the highest risk period, because that's the 7 year itch. And so there's a lot of resources out there. And even just curating these resources is, you know, at the end of each issue of the newsletter, you could have like 3 articles you read this week about marriage that you think other people should read. There's infinite content.
Yeah.
Even like, yeah, you know, here's 131 unique baby girl names.
Yeah.
That's an issue that could come up in the first year of marriage.
I feel like there's not going to be a shortage of themes of these newsletters for sure. Because even just looking at some of these lists, I didn't even think about some of these problems.
Yeah. And there's going to be plenty of stories online. And again, you will have your own unique spin on it because you have your experience, you know, thousands of people in the wedding industry, and you'll also be able to talk to experts, and the experts will be happy to talk to you because it's publicity for them. If you're talking to a divorce lawyer, that's publicity for the divorce lawyer. He's not giving you free services. He's just telling you how he would approach a problem and how people should think about a problem. And then who are they going to hire when they get a divorce? The divorce lawyer you spoke to, or when they're working on a prenup or a postnup? Like, why should people consider a postnup when they've already gotten married? Like, nobody even thinks about that. And here's the reasons why someone might think about a postnup. And here's resources, or here's how to find the right postnup lawyer for you. Or here's where you could go to LegalZoom and they have templates for postnups. You know, or you could just have a template for a postnup, you know, qualifying that you're not a lawyer and saying it was, that you got the stamp of approval of a lawyer.
Yeah, I really like this idea. I want to run with it. I want to do a lot of work on it because I find excitement in it.
Yeah, that's good. I think it has to kind of like ring true to your heart.
Yeah.
Because you've been doing the bridesmaid for hire for 6 years. That's a good time to get tired of doing something.
Yeah.
And you still do it for money, but this is something that might scale really once fire is lit under it. It's something that could scale really fast. I mean, my first year, my first month of selling newsletters, I sold $1.8 million worth of newsletters in the first month. Now, it's because I had a big email list and that helped. And, you know, also I think investing material, which I don't like to write about investing for free because I kind of moved from that since 2010. But, you know, that's something that people are willing to pay for. But I think with this kind of stuff, I know for a fact people are willing to pay for it because I paid for something like that, not in a marriage situation, but in another relationship type situation.
Yeah. And I think there's multiple ways to make income from it. There's the subscription, there's affiliate, there's even just like, you know, sponsored products, even maybe there's so many different, and I'm going to make a list of the different ways, but I do think there's a lot of different revenue streams from a newsletter like this.
Yeah. And there's also upselling courses or higher end newsletters. And you know, you can also build like, let's say wedding planners are, you know, let's say you're an affiliate for some people, but other people are an affiliate for you. So a wedding planner might get 70% of your first year revenues if they sell one of your newsletters to somebody they're working with who's getting married. Well, now you have a relationship with that wedding planner that's even deeper. You could say, let me see your social media. And that could potentially be, if you went down that route as well, a client for your wedding social media business. And by the way, you don't have to do it. Someone could learn from you. Mm-hmm. Maybe you sell a course, how to do social media in the online, you know, in the wedding business, if you're in the wedding industry. And you hire, well, as you get clients, you just hire people to do it, but they have to take your course also to do it. And then, you know, you just outsource people to do the Instagram accounts or TikTok accounts for your clients.
Yeah. I think there is a huge need for something like that. Whether I'm the person who does it or someone else does it, I think there's a huge need for good courses or a good person who knows what they're doing in the wedding industry to disrupt the marketing.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, it seems like you like pets. I didn't know that. You have a couple of things on your idea list about dogs.
Yeah, my husband and I, he wanted to start a business in the dog industry. And then when we got a dog in the pandemic, we think about constantly the problems and who's solving them. So we're always thinking about maybe an idea in the dog world.
Yeah. So and that's also another thing, by the way, couples need to talk about, but usually don't. Like, I would say something like, of course I love dogs. And then I get married and somebody wants to buy a dog. And I'm like, oh, I hate dogs. So...
Or what kind of dog? I mean, there's so many fights and conversations that happen around that.
Yeah. And then I think, you know, let's talk about just real quickly some of your other lists here. You know, to some extent, when you sell a newsletter, you're a little bit of a brand. Not as much as where it takes your time. You know, you'll be able to sell a good newsletter business with a good number of subscribers is a business you could sell because that's recurring profits and revenue. And the profits, there's no additional cost to adding a new subscriber. So it's okay for that if you're a little bit of a brand. Like Dave Ramsey, who does newsletters about finance, he's a brand, but his business has value. And he hires people also who write articles for him and you know, that's how he gets more equity. So a lot of that, a lot of this removes, you could still be a brand, but it removes some of the risk. And But you also mentioned that you're worried, potentially a worry, a risk, as you expose too much of your personal life. I think people appreciate, I think the more you expose, the more money you make.
Yeah.
And I always say vulnerability buys freedom. And so the more vulnerable you are, the more people want to know what's going on with you and will pay to get the advice that you share when you're exposing problems that you have.
Yeah, I've noticed that. And I think, you know, I've been writing about my personal life since 2010. So people know me. And of course, there's things I hold back on, you know, but...
Yeah, you don't have to reveal everything.
Right, right. I think I reveal about 75% of my life.
I'm like that as well. And people think, you know, people don't really know what you're not revealing, but that's okay.
Right.
You know, you're revealing the stuff you think is important anyway.
Yeah.
So, and then I think starting on this will lead to other ideas. Like, let's say, let's say you're writing all of stuff about, you know, what are the 10 conversations that people should have about real estate, and what are some of the problems people have about real estate in their first year, and what are some of the solutions? And sometimes people don't even know what a real estate transaction's like. Like, oh, you're buying your first apartment together? Well, here's how much money you're going to need to make if you want to put 20% down and get an 80% loan for a $100,000 apartment.
Yeah.
And here's the process of, well, there's an appraisal, and there's, you know, they're going to check your income and 3 years of taxes, and they're going to talk to your prior landlords. And, you know, so all these, this is how it happens. But these are also conversations like, what's your landlord going to say about you? What's your landlord going to say about you? What's your credit score? You know, they're going to, you know, what's the background check going to show up from the lender or from the seller of the apartment? So, you know, and then of course, to find out more about real estate and even, you know, make a career from it, here's my friend's course about flipping apartments, even in your first year of marriage. And here's somebody I know who did it, and here's his testimonial. And boom, you make money in two ways from that one newsletter.
This is a way of thinking that I just have never thought about, because I'm always thinking of how I can create, but I'm never ever thinking about how I could leverage other people like this.
Yeah, it was stunning to me. There was one year where my own newsletters were kind of breaking even.
Yep.
And then I found out, I'm like, well, we're making a profit. How are we making a profit? Which me asking that question shows you how involved I get in my own business. Like, I didn't really know the answer. And it turned out from my free newsletter this one year, I think it was like 2017 or 2019, where all the profits came from the revenues generated by selling other people's newsletters on my free newsletter. So I think it's a very interesting business. And unfortunately, there's a lot of scammers and bullshitters in the business. Like, anytime you see somebody say, you know, driving in a Rolls Royce saying, here's how I made $20 million by the time I was, you know, 33. And now I'm in a private jets with all these girls and blah, blah, blah. Those are all bullshit.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of value in a lot of newsletters. I subscribe to quite a few newsletters that where I have real value. And some are related to investing, some are relating to entrepreneurship, some are related to in the past relationships. And I have one, I'm not interested in sports at all, but I get a newsletter about sports finance, and it's just, there's a lot of interesting stuff out there, and people look for newsletters that they want to buy. It's better than a newspaper right now, because traditional media has failed everybody this past year. So alternative media, which is what the newsletter business is valuable. There's also a factor, people say, oh, well, the ads are so scammy. That's true. The ads are really scammy. But there's a great video by Alain de Botton, who's like this philosopher in France. Yeah. And he says the video is about how even nice guys have to use Machiavellian methods, because the bad guys are using Machiavellian methods. And so they're getting the most exposure. So if the nice guys don't use similar methods, they won't get any exposure and they won't sell any newsletters that can actually help people. So there's a balance there somewhere of, you know, what kind of, how aggressive your ads are and so on.
Yeah, and I understand that. I respect that. I mean, even in some of the newsletters I subscribe to, they always have that sponsored section. And I personally will skip over that. But I do understand and respect that they have that in there. You know, it's how they're making some money off of those free newsletters. So I respect that process.
Yeah. So I do too. And and a lot of people I know have really great newsletters that provide a lot of value. And a lot of newsletters I know could sell more if they were just a little bit more aggressive in their ads. And they're not, for various reasons. I was very afraid to have an aggressive ad when I first started, but you do get 10x the number of subscribers, which at the end of the day allows you to help more people.
And by ad, are you talking about ads in the newsletter, or can you just clarify?
Like a YouTube ad or a Facebook ad.
Oh, okay. I got you.
You ever see these YouTube ads? Like you're watching a YouTube video and then there's an ad, like some guy in his Rolls Royce getting onto a private plane.
Yeah.
And like, you know, my life was shit until I followed these 20 steps to making millions and now I'm a millionaire.
Yes.
And blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I've seen those. I get hit with those all of the time. And I get what you're saying about them being super scammy, but
some of those people are scams. Yeah. And yeah. I would say most of those people are scams. But that's an example of an aggressive ad. And, you know, after that, it's, you know, just actually being legit. The word of mouth goes around that you're the legit person and people then buy your newsletter.
I think even for this topic, there can be a little bit of emotion played into an ad around the emotion of the first year. Also urgency. I think there's a lot that could be in an ad for a first year marriage newsletter that's head turning and provocative and out there.
Oh yeah. Just the fact that the divorce rate is rising, the number of children per couple is going down around the world. You know, we just are sort of slowly coming out of a pandemic and economic lockdown that have left many families and couples in a state of complete chaos or confusion. There is a lot of urgency.
Yeah.
So there's urgency. There's ultra specific. This is the first year of marriage. There's user-friendly. You're doing all the work and research and finding out all these things. Mm-hmm. Plus you're linking to other resources and other ways they can get help. There's your uniqueness. Like whoever before set up a bridesmaid for hire business and knows as many people, knows the wide variety of people, you know, in the wedding industry and in the marriage industry and even in the marriage counseling industry. Like you went to a marriage counselor because you knew this was something that you should do before you get married.
Yep.
And so it's unique. And then there's other use that I always forget. I always forget the list of use. Yeah, I think this is something to focus on for the next week or so. And then we could also play around with other ideas, but you know, and a lot of times the best ideas, for better or for worse, are these digital ones, like either a newsletter or a course or whatever. But I think these are almost the fastest ways to build a $1 million business. Not a $1 billion business, but definitely a $1 million business.
Yeah, and I think because I've tried so many that have never been successful, I'm interested in the space because I want to learn how to make them successful. So the thought of doing a newsletter that could become something is interesting to me. I mean, I've had a Monday newsletter every Monday for 7 years. I've never monetized it. I've never grown it. It's the same thing. So I think I need to stop doing what I'm doing because I'm always doing the same thing and almost break my mold a little bit. That's why I'm glad we're doing something in the space.
Yeah. And I think like the fact that you have a 10% open rate, I think we should also figure out, it's almost like another list. What can you do to bring that up to 20%, to double the open rate? And 10% is not bad. That might be close to industry standard, but 20% is great. That's a home run.
Yeah.
And so if you have a 20% open rate by re-engaging, maybe just because you've gotten a little bit, you know, off stream a little bit, but maybe this will reinvigorate and you'll re-engage with people and, you know, maybe you can ask people to send you questions. And again, I think also you could, you know, link to your newsletter on your Quora profile. And I would definitely just as an experiment, try answering 10 questions on Quora this next week. And put, for every answer, you've got to put your most insane story that is related to that answer. Because just like with everything else, storytelling is the key. And this is the thing that really separates out the great writers, the great newsletter writers, the great course writers, the great speech makers is the ability to tell a story. You could tell a story. You've had a great book already about your experiences. So you'll be able to, and look at some of the questions that I've answered on Quora. You'll see that all of them have stories. And I think something like the fourth or fifth most followed person on Quora, which has millions of users. So I think, let me see. I haven't been to Quora in a while.
And you think Quora is better than doing it on Reddit?
Do it both. Reddit sometimes, okay, I think, is a lower brow audience, meaning they're more likely to just shit on you and vote you down. Whereas Quora is like, people really appreciate people who take the time to answer questions. I feel like Quora is a little bit more of an adult site. Adult in a good way, not like pornography.
Yeah.
So let me see my statistics. I have not answered a question on Quora maybe in 6 months or more. In the past 30 days, I've had 195,000 views on my answers.
Oh, you have 282,000 followers.
Okay, yeah. So let me see. It's funny. I couldn't find it, but you did. So look at my answers and I've generated a lot of followers on my regular email list from my Quora answers. So this is a good method.
I'm going to study what you've done because I have a profile. I've never used this. And I think it's definitely a missed opportunity for someone like me who has a strong wedding niche of just going in there and answering questions.
Yeah. So I think this could be great. So let's schedule something for next week and continue the conversation.
I feel excited and fired up. So thank you so much. This was everything I needed this week. Thank you.